Welcome to our Agile Tales, where we share the various successes and trials we've encountered as we navigate corporate levels and political waters to transform the business to be adaptable to this forever changing world.
We are continuing our conversation with Jürgen Apollo about versatile organization design using the Unfixed Model, a groundbreaking approach he pioneered that's changing the game for businesses striving for agility and adaptability. He is the founder of The Agile Management Company and the author of several best-selling books, including Management 3.0 and Startup, Scale Up, Screw Up. With a background in computer science and management, he has been instrumental in transforming countless businesses worldwide. Get ready to be inspired as we welcome the future of Agile organizations with Jürgen Apollo on our Agile Tales. Hello, Jürgen. It's great to have you back on our Agile Tales. In our last episode, you shared the insightful story that inspired the Unfixed Model, highlighting customer challenges in transitioning between product versions. You emphasized the emergence of horizontal silos in Agile setups, drawing from your observations at CoolBlue, where dedicated teams tackled customer journey issues independently from product managers or owners. My question is, how long have you observed companies like CoolBlue before conceptualizing the Unfixed Model?
Well, I started the Unfixed Model, which I call a pattern library, by the way. It's not a framework, so let me make that clear right from the start. It's a library of good patterns, useful patterns. Nothing is mandatory, but all of it is optional, and some are very much suggested, while others are perhaps more rare. I started on that a year and a half ago, simply because a number of things clicked in my head. I had experience with Management 3.0, as you may know, for a long time, quite successful, focusing on the management role, manage the system, not the people, and so on. But I never knew how to move beyond the idea that every team has to offer value to somebody else, whether it is a customer or an internal team. All teams need to be value units. That's how far as I got with Management 3.0. And then it took me a couple of years to just observe other things, and books came out like Team Topologies and Dynamic Reteaming and Network Scale and Agile and others. And together they started sort of painting the picture. The pieces of the puzzles became available. And then I knew, okay, I need something else. I need to draw something that is not a framework, but that is a set of options that people can use to have a more flexible organization. That's why it is called Unfix. Unstructure your company, make it more flexible, more versatile, so that you can change faster. And the experience crew is one of the patterns that it offers. I also have borrowed a couple of patterns from Team Topologies. There are some other patterns from Spotify Model and so on. You will recognize most of them because they're good patterns. Why reinvent the wheel when you already know what is working? And the whole idea of a pattern library is, by the way, from Christopher Alexander, who wrote, I think in the 70s of last century, a book called A Pattern Language, where he described good patterns for cities, like the town square and the promenade and things like that. Those are patterns that are good patterns to have. And these patterns already existed before the book. Obviously, cities were already there before the book came out. He was just the person who observed what are good things to do when you do urban planning and city design. What are the things you need to think of? And I think we are there now as well with the Unfixed Model. It's not reinventing the wheel. It's just observing the good things that companies do. Like have an experience crew that focuses on the experience. That might be something you want to consider. So that is a good pattern. We just observe it, we name it, and we add it to the toolbox. It's a little bit like Lego. I like that metaphor. It's lots of options. I recently learned that Lego has 4,000 different types of Lego pieces. Did you know that? 4,000. Nobody knows. That's so much. And that's quite a lot. Do we have a box with 4,000 pieces at home? Probably not. Do we need all 4,000? Hell no. You just start with what is useful for you. So I like that idea. You need a lot of options. You need a big box of options But then you use only a few, just the ones that you need to build what you need in your context. So I am working now on a next release of the Unfixed Model with more patterns, more options, make a bigger Lego box in the next couple of months so that we can draw more designs and offer more scenarios. If you have this kind of problem, we suggest combining these patterns. If you have this kind of problem, you might consider this. Like there are thousands of different Lego models built with the same simple bricks that the toolkit offers. It's a good metaphor to use for a pattern library. And that's what Unfix is all about. Because what I want organizations to be is to be more flexible and to be more network oriented. Because we have so much difficulty getting rid of hierarchies and the middle management layers. I think we have some good suggestions for how to deconstruct that and enable them to become a network organization.
I am a Lego fan. I did not realize that there are 4,000 different pieces. I should probably check my sets upstairs. Anyway, you stated that Unfix is a pattern language, a pattern library, and not a framework, mind you. So for our listeners out there, what is a pattern language or a pattern library? What do you mean by this?
Well, let's start with framework first. The word itself already gives you an indication what it means. When you look at the definitions of framework, it suggests that there is a rigid structure, something that keeps everything else together. That's the idea of a framework. You have a frame and something that you can work to put other things in and take things out, but there's a frame, a structure that is static. That is the thing that holds it all together. That's a framework. That's the idea behind it. So certain models that we are familiar with, such as Scrum and Scaled Agile Framework and others, indeed, those are frameworks because they have a certain number of mandatory patterns, mandatory things to do. Otherwise, you're not doing the framework. In Scaled Agile Framework, in SAFe, they literally call it Essential Scrum. It's in the word Essential SAFe. It is, the word essential is there. So if you don't have an ART, an agile release train, you do not have SAFe. It's literally there on the website. So some things are mandatory. That's the frame of the framework. It is different with a Lego box. Is any Lego piece in your collection at home, is it mandatory? Do you have to use it every time? I don't think so. You have just the box and you can start anywhere. Whatever you want to build, you start grabbing. And that's like a pattern library. It is also a model, but it's not a framework model. It's a more flexible approach to modeling. So that's the difference. And there are other pattern libraries out there, by the way. Sociocracy 3.0 is a pattern library. Liberating Structures is a pattern library. And I've always called Management 3.0 a toolbox, because nothing in it is mandatory. So I could also argue that this leans more towards the pattern library option or side of the spectrum than the framework. It's definitely not a framework. So as long as everything is optional, you decide what you take out of the box, and all the options in the box are potentially useful depending on your context, you have a pattern library, basically.
That's a very clear distinction now. So in terms of the distinction, you clearly map that out. Is it because people tend to gravitate towards one or the other at companies today? Why do you think people tend to gravitate towards frameworks?
Gosh, this is maybe the most important question that we have. I think because they're an easy sell. I noticed myself when I began with the Unfixed Model, as soon as I created a picture that is actually just one possible arrangement of the patterns, then I started generating buzz because it was a picture and then people could see themselves, imagine themselves in that picture and say, oh, so I would be working on the platform crew maybe, or, ah, so the manager goes into the governance crew, et cetera, et cetera. So the picture sells. That is the marketable thing. Now, for all their flaws, some frameworks sell pretty well because they have a quite convincing picture. And the picture sells to decision makers, usually managers, and they say, oh, well, that looks sensible. Let's start implementing this. Apparently, that serves a certain need. And now you can try to figure out what is the need here that is being addressed. This is, by the way, sort of meta design thinking that we do here, meta jobs to be done. We can do a customer interview there, as I've done actually a couple of times. What is the need that is addressed here? I think Safe has done a pretty good job with their naming, because what people want is certainty. They don't like things changing all the time. So when you show them one picture that doesn't change, that makes some people very happy because it serves a need. Now, it is an illusion, in my opinion, that is being sold. It is smoke and mirrors. But that is what the sell is, and it sells well. So that is something we can learn from. There are basic human needs at play here for managers, for people in other roles. They don't like a lot of change. They would like to protect their territories. They have gone through a couple of years of peer fighting to get into positions that they want to claim and that they want to cling on to. So they want to know that that position is safe when a new framework is being rolled out. That's the kind of thinking, I think, behind such frameworks and why they sell. It also means that this is something we have to take into account when you come up with something else. Because if I offer a pattern library and I say, hey, anything is possible, you can build whatever you want, I make it much more difficult for myself. Because then people are like, oh my God, now where do I end up? Where is my job going? I don't know yet, because the picture, I have to draw the picture myself. You're not telling me. So the sell is more difficult. It is also more honest, in my opinion. But that is something that we struggle with now, that we're trying to figure out how to do this in a way that sells, that people understand, and that will make them embrace things more easily. One question that we frequently get, for example, is where is this already implemented? The question makes no sense. Like, do you ever get the question, where is Lego already implemented? It's a strange question. Or if anyone has the book by Christopher Alexander, Pattern Language, which city has implemented this book? Are you kidding? That's a weird question. The book just shows you good pattern. You don't implement the whole book. You browse and then you start copying some ideas. It's the same with unfixed model. You're not supposed to implement the unfixed model. You're supposed to browse through the catalog of patterns and say, this might be useful and that might be useful. And then step by step, you start changing things. It is a harder sell than coming up with one picture that says, oh, here's the promise. This is what you're going to get. We're all going to need an implementation roadmap of 3 months and some expensive certification, but hey, you'll be very safe by the end of the roadmap. That's easier. Yeah, for sure.
That's very true. I mean, in my experience, I've come across a lot of people who don't want to think. They just want to be told what to do. They just want to follow some sort of process or certain paths. Would that be another kind of thinking as well? If so, how does Unfix play into that kind of thinking?
I don't know yet. I'm honest about this. I don't know. This is something we have to figure out. Apparently, an implementation roadmap sells. Now, I don't want to offer an implementation roadmap because it would be dishonest from where I am standing. I don't believe that it works like that. But I have to recognize the need behind the question. They are asking for this. There is a reason behind that. So I have to figure out what is the underlying need here that we will have to address in some other way. And we can go back to the whole discussion about customer interviews and figuring out the real need, all the way back to what Henry Ford once said, customers ask me for faster horses, but what they just need is for getting from A to B, and I can give them a car for that. Well, they didn't ask. So I need to be like the Henry Ford and the Steve Jobs and figuring out, okay, so this is what they're asking for. They don't realize what they're asking. There are probably other ways of offering what they need, but this is innovation. This is the holy grail of innovation and product market fit and everything. So if you have the answer for me, JF, then I would be happy to hear.
I don't think I have the answer, but I do think that that's going to be a bigger conversation sometime in the future. based on what you just said, right? Because I experienced the same things. But before further diving into Unfix, I'm very curious. You mentioned that everybody has to focus on the customer experience. Does focusing on the total customer experience mean a change in the vision and mission of a company?
They might have to be tuned. Actually, funny that you asked, because I'm going to offer a new set of patterns on goal setting the next couple of weeks and months as part of the Unfixed model. And one part of that is on the vision of experience, as I call it. I've looked into product vision, company vision, and there are some tools for that, the vision statements and value propositions and on and on. There are jobs to be done, canvases, etc. And I did notice that quite a few of them, they focus very much on the value, like the value proposition it is often called, which is a good thing. But the word experience is often not mentioned. What is the outcome of that value? As I sometimes tell people, what we should stop selling is bytes and atoms of products. We're selling happiness molecules, endorphin and dopamine and oxytocin and so on. Because ultimately, people want to be happy for using our products. That is how they say that in a jobs to be done community. They hire products to be happier in a certain moment. Could be for a fleeting moment when they just purchased the coffee. That's 2 minutes of happiness. That's the job of the coffee. And that's happiness molecules. And I sort of miss that in most approaches to visioning the product vision or the company vision. What is the outcome in terms of the experience of the person who uses the product? The value is pretty clear. Great coffee or whatever the context is of the product. But what is the result in terms of experience and the happiness in their daily life? So I think that's worth just another next step. That's why I emphasized it by using a vision of experience instead of the product vision, because the word itself, the product vision, we have always talked about the product vision. Why is that the word product in there? Is this focus on the product with product roadmap, product backlog, product vision, product managers? The product is not important. The customer is not interested in the product. The customer is interested in being a little bit happier for a brief amount of time. That's what they hire your product for. That's why they pay you, to have a fleeting moment of improved experience. So let's talk about that experience and ignore the product in the definition of the vision. So that is what I try to achieve. Not easy, by the way. But to give you a very concrete example, applying it to myself with my own team, practicing what I preach and leading my example, I thought, what is the experience that I would like people to have when they start playing with the pattern library? What is the outcome? Because obviously the patterns are useful. There's value there. That's because I borrowed them from other places. I just repackage them and give them nice color and names and so on. So the value is obvious. But what is the experience for people? Well, I remember having a case study with a pipe drive company in Estonia, one of the unicorn companies there, a large SaaS company. And I noticed a sense of pride for the fact that they created their own framework. They literally called it the Pipe Drive Agile Framework, which was their own method that they created for themselves with patterns that they found in other places, some at Spotify, some in other places, but they created something with those building blocks for themselves in their context, and there it worked. And similar to what the Spotify model once was, at Spotify, they made something, Henrik Nieberg and Anders Iversen, for Spotify that worked for them in that moment in time, and it was a good thing, and they published that as a case study. That is what you should be doing. You should not expect other people to start copying that as the Spotify model, and nobody should be copying the Pipe Drive model or the Pipe Drive framework as a standard thing. No, the Pipe Drive Agile framework works for Pipe Drive. And it worked very well for them, and they were proud of that. And when I realized that later on, I thought, maybe that's the experience that I'm after, pride. make people feel proud of creating something for themselves. Like, I'm sure you have been proud, JF, of making things out of your Lego box into beautiful, beautiful models. And you were done and you think, I rock. This is cool. I'm going to put this on Facebook or whatever you've done with it. That feeling of pride, I thought, maybe that is the experience that I'm after. So for now, I put this in our vision of experience. That is, the value is obvious, is the pattern library, that is what we offer, but the experience is perhaps a sense of pride. So let's focus on that. How can we make people feel proud of designing their way of working with standard patterns that we found from all over the world? But like people feel proud of putting their IKEA set together back home, which is also sort of self-constructed, although of course you just follow the book. But so the analogy is a bit off there. But there is a sense of pride. They call it the IKEA effect for a reason. There is a sense of pride of doing something yourself, that finishing touch, putting the building blocks together and saying, I made this, even though the components are borrowed from other places. Doesn't matter. You made it yourself, and now it's there in your home or in your company. And that sense of pride, yeah, that could be the experience that I'm after. So the vision of experience for my little company is help people be proud of designing their way of working.
Wow, I'm very blown away by this new idea of yours, this vision of experience, and I'm really looking forward to hearing more about it in the next few weeks. Thank you.
So let's dive into Unfix, shall we? I think you mentioned it, but I'm just going to call it out. How did you come up with Unfix? I mean, you said you borrowed the patterns from somewhere else. What are those places?
I borrowed 4 patterns from Team Topologies. I'm sure many of the listeners are familiar with the Streamline team and the Enabling team and so on, Platform team. They're just good patterns. I mean, they also did not invent that. They just saw what companies were doing that made total sense. So they named the 4 patterns. I did the same thing. I used slightly different names for reasons that are beyond the scope of this podcast, but it's the same patterns. Then I found others, like the tribe in the Spotify model, I found very important because I have noticed, as I've often said, that without a feeling of a home, a small group of people to come back to, I feel lost. I once worked at a large consultancy of 4,000 people, and my brain was rented out to a customer for some .NET project, and my legs had to bring my brain there. And then I was there with 3 other people, and I loved my team. We had a small team of 4 people, and for a year we had fun and we tried to do good things. But I didn't know anyone at the company that I was from. I only knew my manager because he decided how much I got paid. And I knew my HR person because she made sure that I got paid. And those were the only 2 people I knew. So after a year, I quit because I had no connection whatsoever to that whole company. I had no home. So that is, I think, one of the things that maybe not explicitly describe, but that is what the tribe does for you. It gives you a home. Now, I didn't like the word tribe because some people complain about cultural appropriation and things like that. So I decided to call it the base. It's your home. It's where you return to, where you know everyone. And that cannot be a large group of people. It has to be a small number of people, maybe up to 100 or whatever, because beyond that, it starts to break down. You need to feel psychologically safe within a relatively small group. So that's a pattern I borrowed from Spotify model. And then there are others, as I said, from the book network, Skill and Agile, forums, those are guilds, basically. I also borrowed from Spotify. That was the starting point. Actually, forums or guilds were already used elsewhere, of course. That's not what Spotify came up with at all. It's a known pattern, the community of practice. So those were the structural patterns that I began with, but now we have plenty more in terms of the types of forums or guilds and decision-making methods and reteaming methods, etc. All from different sources, too much to name. So the Lego box is getting larger and larger.
Thank you for spending some time with us today. Please join us next time as we continue our conversation with Jürgen Apollo on versatile organization design using the Unfix model here on our Agile Tales.
Thank you so much for listening to our Agile Tales. Feel free to ping us on ouragiletales.com.